Welcome to the Eukrof webinar and thank you for listening. My name is Marieke Meulemans, CEO of TSP Central, and I'm from the Netherlands. A member of the CTR Steering Committee in the Netherlands and the CTIS Training Expert Group of EMA. We assist organizations with hands-on CTR and CTIS training, and I'm also a member of the Eukrof Training and Events Working Group, organizing these podcasts. With the EU CTR implementation coming into effect on January 31st, 2022, the European Commission wants to create a favourable environment to conduct clinical trials in the EU. With the implementation of the CTR comes the introduction of CTIS, the Central Clinical Trial Information System, to be used for all submissions and reporting of clinical trials conducted in the EU with medicinal products for human use. With many organisations currently outsourcing the setup, execution and management of their trials to CROs, the CTR presents new challenges. In this podcast, we provide an overview of key considerations for CROs in their transition to the CTR and will answer questions raised during my webinar on CTIS, which was held in April 2021. And I'd like to welcome Sebastian Payne, Director at Deloitte, who's leading a team of life science specialists and assist organizations with regulatory and technological changes. So Seb, you supported EMA with their CTIS training program, throughout its development at EMA. Is that correct? And what exactly was your role?
Thank you, Marieke. Pleasure to be speaking here today. Yes, that is correct. I still am, in fact, the lead business partner for Deloitte with the European Medicines Agency. We have a business services framework with them, and we've been working with them on across different projects since 2014. One of the projects which we initiated with them in 2015 and worked on it through to the end of 2019 was their, it used to be called at the time, Clinical Trial Portal and Database. It's now the CTIS program, which was helping them primarily on the business services side of things, so setting up the business requirements for CTIS and also supporting them with the UATs that they went through. We were not involved, I think it's important to point out, in the technology or IT implementation, which I know has been responsible, as acknowledged by EMA on their website, for some delays. But we are getting there. We are looking forward to going live, and we're also helping industry prepare for that go live.
Well, great. And I think we can assume by because of that, that you know CTIS and CTR pretty well. So before we go into our questions asked by the attendees of a previous webinar, I'd like to ask you whether you think the CTR could have potential competitive benefits for CROs.
Yes, I think it could. I mean, the CROs already have the benefit of having the relationships with industry, being trusted partners with industry. And I already know from the work we are doing with industry clients that in many cases they're looking to CROs to help with support in this, which is a significant change. It's not an iteration on the directive. It is an organisational change. And so I think that there's the opportunity for CROs to be very much part of that journey with industry. I think it is a bit of a mixed bag in that there will also be challenges because of that. Primarily, the regulation is looking to, because of the regulation is looking to change how pharma industry are operating and really making them examine their own processes, they may also be looking to take roles in-house, which they would have previously worked with the CROs to fulfill those roles. So that may also be a consequence of the regulatory change.
And when looking in more detail to that, what can CROs do now to be prepared for CTIS?
Well, I think it's imminent. The go-live is imminent, really. It's going to go live on the 31st of January next year. So there's only 3 months, even less, if you count the fact that there's a holiday period in between. And I would imagine that the CROs, which are already supporting their clients, are already themselves and have been looking to be ready themselves since the last year at least, and probably beforehand. And certainly I know that the CRO industry associations have been working with EMA as part of kind of the UAT processes for CTIS to understand it and relay kind of those changes to the CROs. So with that in mind, I would expect that they would be helping their clients get ready, looking at their operating methods with industry, and working out what that the new way of operating will be next year with industry, with CTIS in place. I will also say that there's, in a way, more of an emphasis on CROs being ready because of the services they provide than maybe pharma themselves, because pharma can indulge a bit more probably into the transition period, whereas a CRO is a third party, they need to be ready to take on the need of clients to say, I want to go live with CTR when the system goes live, and I'm going to submit something on in February, you know, 2022. So there is that emphasis as well, which they need to be ready for.
Yeah, definitely. And when zooming into the actual use of CTIS as a CRO, should they register themselves as CTIS users, or should they always take work as like being part of the sponsor? Could you give some details how they should prepare and organize themselves?
Yes, so I think user management is one of the more complex challenges, or one of the more complex or larger changes, if you like, that CTIS is bringing in. And I think in the case of the way CROs may be operating under the directive with industry, that will change, as I mentioned before. Now, the user setup in CTIS, I suspect, and having spoken to a number of clients, around the different level of access rights, and I think that we might get to this subject later in the conversation as well. They may not want or to have the high level administrator role given that directly to the CRO, because certainly if they have multiple CROs and things like that, there's kind of security considerations. And what that means is it will probably be a middle level access which CROs will be given, and probably at the we may talk about this later as well. There's two different models. There's the clinical, or rather the trial centric model, and the organization centric model. I won't dwell on those, but I imagine the organization centric model will be the one that CROs are following, and that gives the ability for industry to give different levels of medium access across different matrices, if you like, of the system to the CRO. So they will need to arrange themselves, as I mentioned before, in a way that works with industry, and it may be different with the different contracts they have with their different clients.
Yeah. Any technical requirements that a CRO needs to be ready with so that they can actually implement CTIS or working with CTIS?
And I probably kind of dodged this question on the last one, but part of what you asked me, I think, on the previous question as well, is should they be registered in CTIS? So definitely, I think they should be registered, and certainly the relationship you mentioned, they will need to, the relationship that I mentioned before, they would need to be potentially registered and driving trials on a more standalone basis, whereas with other clients, they will be very much given a subsection of tasks traditionally. From a technology, so once they are registered, from a technology implementation standpoint, they will need to set up the workflows appropriately. They will, and the workflows internally, and I think they can do that a bit more than as there are no systems available currently, really available, which I would say are robust and tested, because the CTIS system is not live. Actually, preparing technology interfaces into CTIS could be quite would be a challenge right now. I think the sandbox is going live for sponsors this month, and into next year, obviously, the system will be live. They can set up technology interfaces during that period, which are more robust. What they can do now, which I think is important, is set up their own internal workflow systems and kind of the process and organization management in relation to their clients from a technology standpoint.
Yeah, so we're talking from two standpoints. First of all, of course, the user management, how that's set up, and secondly, the technological piece. So what I understand is that the sponsor can allocate the sponsor admin role to a CRO, or do you think they won't do that?
As I mentioned before, I think that there are challenges which arise in them doing that, which will make them wary. Technically, you can... So the first time an organisation is registered in OMS, there will be a requirement to have a sponsor and needs access to CTIS to have a sponsor admin set up, and that will go through the registration process of EMA, where they will need to submit certain documents, evidence to the fact that they have the role to be the sponsor admin. Once that first sponsor admin is in place, they can then allocate other representatives, including a CRO potentially, to be another sponsor admin. But in doing so, they would give them all the rights that they would have as a sponsor, and so they would actually be able to then, in theory, see across all trials, all documentations, including things like the QIMPD, and some of the operations which CROs will already be already have in place. I believe that, you know, they won't have those privileges by default. And certainly, as I also mentioned before, if you have a multi CRO setup, which I know organisations do, and we are working with them, then you would actually have user management rights potentially over another CRO, and I could see that, of course, being problematic.
Yeah, that definitely sounds as not a situation you want to run into. So when when looking at actually outsourcing the tasks that you as a CRO have within CTIS, could you tell us a bit more about how outsourcing of the actual CTA submission is managed in CTIS?
So it will be dependent very much on the relationship with the client of the CRO and the setup they have as a CRO. So I'm talking hypotheticals here. I believe that they will be set up as an organisation, in an organisation-centric model. Mostly we're not talking about the trial-centric model. And I think that CROs will probably be interfacing, and it's actually in the EMA's, not user handbook, sorry, the sponsor handbook from the EMA, if it's in that website, where they say we recommend that third-party vendors such as CROs come in that middle, what we call the business user layer. And then those business users would be, the tasks that they would be allocated would be set out depending on the user rights. So it may be a client would want them to have submission rights. It may be that they give them the authority to submit without review or have internal reviews. But it also may be that the client may want them to have preparer rights but keep the submission rights, for example, in-house and do an internal review before. And so those are the different setups which will define the task setup for the CROs.
Yeah. Hey, and when we have certain rights and you as a sponsor still want to have that reviewer role, do you as a sponsor still need to have... to be registered in the OMS system, even if all regulatory activities are delegated to a CRO?
Well, yes, you will, because ultimately the product which you're responsible for, the product which the trial is for, you have legal responsibilities there. I have also had discussions with clients on the aspects of the legal representative, which comes in as part of the new clinical trial regulation, and if that's something which could be outsourced, if you like. There's nothing that categorically, much as the same way you can have a sponsor admin, which says you couldn't do that. I'm not sure how keen the CROs would be on taking that responsibility, but you might be able to do that. But I think as an organisation, certainly... big pharma, even small pharma, certainly if you are in an organisation-centric model, you would want to be registered as the sponsor for your own products.
Sure. And last question around the seat is the user management piece and the portal itself. Will it replace the current portal, the Common European Submission Portal?
So I think, so I guess to answer that question, in I'm imagining that, that really when we're talking about CESP, which certainly is due to be replaced, they've got the DADI program at the EMA, and they are looking at a new submissions portal in that respect. But any activities in relation to clinical trials that are probably going on through CESP are what we would call in new terminology the part two parts of the assessment, so the areas where you're working with the individual member states. Of course, one of the main changes with the CTR and CTIS system is that you have this centralized tool. So, and that centralized tool will be replacing NUDRACT, which is currently the tool used, of course, under the directive. And so I think of actually that being the tool that's being replaced. But any correspondence back before between the different member states will now go through the reporting member state within CTIS to those member states. So yes, that will be replaced by CESP, and then all the other things will be as well. Will be replaced with DADI.
Clear. I think it's good moment to switch to another topic that there were some questions about the submission strategy. I think a lot of people are thinking of possibilities that that CTR is actually providing with respect to submission strategy. So how would that work for multi-country studies? Most of the submission work will be done centrally, like headquarters. But is there, in your opinion, anything in specific that the local operating companies should pay attention to at this moment?
Yes, and I think, again, it depends on how you're currently operating under the directive, what you're choosing to keep, update, modernise and change from the directive to the regulation, as to what the kind of the local organisations should be watching. And I think you have two aspects. You have local affiliates of the pharmaceutical company. And then, of course, you might have local elements or local organisations of the CRO, which will have, of course, different roles. But I would say what's those two different aspects have in common is the regulation is bringing in much tighter timelines. So, and one of the things here, if you do get a request for information, an RFI, you will have only a certain amount of time to respond to that. And when you have to go with that request into a central hub, down to either a local affiliate or, in the case of CROs, a local organisation which needs to check, respond, change, and then that go back up the line into the system, delays and bottlenecks can be introduced, which can have consequences. And so, you know, that's just one aspect where I think they will need to watch out that they have the processes in place from the outset to avoid kind of those bottlenecks, let alone when you bring in also double checking between the CRO, local organisations and the pharmaceutical company as well. That also needs to be added, of course.
Definitely big challenges coming up with respect to the submission strategies and the way we communicate within our companies. Last but not least, I think there's a couple of questions that we are facing regarding the transition periods. We're starting the transition period, of course, on January 31st, 2022, 3 months. Studies that have started before 2022, but with a duration of, well, that goes beyond the transition period. How does that work? Do they need to be transferred to CTR as well?
So I guess just taking a step back there in describing the transition period, and I guess to baseline it for listeners, the way that it's set up is the first year you can create, of course, new clinical trials under the clinical trial regulation, but you can also create new clinical trials under the directive. After that first year, you can only update clinical trials information and ill submission data under the directive, but you can't create new ones for the following 2 years. And then after the three-year period, you can no longer submit at all under the clinical trial regulation. What EMA suggests as well is when you are transitioning a clinical trial from the directive to the regulation, that you allow a 60-day period, or approximately two months for that transition to take place, which means that you would want to have transitioned any trials that you need to transition by the end of the 3 years 60 days before January the 31st, 2025, which will be November 2024. Yeah. And yes, you will need to make sure that everything is transitioned if studies are going on past that date.
Yeah. Any recommendations there for people who are thinking of submitting their dossier right now? Do you think it's better for them to wait until after February 1st, 2022?
It will depend very much on the organisation's needs. But I would suggest certainly at this point, with go live so imminent, organisations, be they pharma, be they CROs, and the CROs portfolio, if they are looking to run trials, but also submit clinical trial applications within the next few months, I would certainly think about waiting. But it depends upon their timelines for go live, and that also comes back a little bit to the previous mention where pharma has a bit more leeway probably than CROs in terms of being ready. CROs, I would imagine, need to be ready from the first, from the 31st of January next year, and in which case they should already be looking at how they might do that under, you know, for February the 1st, for want of a better expression, and under the CTR.
Yeah. Well, great. And Seb, this is, we're nearly come to the end of our conversation. And thank you so much for a pleasant conversation. It's always a pleasure to have these kinds of talks with you. Maybe some last advice, a take-home message from you to our listeners.
Okay. Yes, I think my take-home message, and I know I'm re-ringing the bell that I've just been talking about, but time is short now, certainly. This is a target which has been moving for some considerable time with delays. That end date now is nigh. And so I do think it's right now it's all about getting ready. And it's getting ready in an environment where you, these different organisations, CROs or pharma, again, need to look at the in-house resource. This is not something which you can do side of desk at this point in time. You need to have your transition plan in place. You need to make sure you have the resources to respond to this change, and you do not want to be caught out come January 31st 2023, which is when you can no longer submit clinical trial applications under the directive, where you do not have the ability to do that. So do piloting, get your teams ready, look at your processes, and get that right. And I think that's even more important for CROs, like I said, than pharma, because they need to be ready sooner, in my opinion.
Definitely. And I think that's a great takeaway message. Thank you for that. I think everyone is warned. Be prepared. Next year is the last year we can actually use to get ready. So to all listeners and to all of you, thank you for listening. Be prepared for CTIS, and hope to see you in the next OCROF podcast.
Thank you.